One of the physicians we spoke with had a question about lipid management.
I think I do a good job of managing my patient's cholesterol. Do I need to monitor triglycerides too?
Well, that's a great question because it's not just LDL cholesterol anymore. It's clear that triglycerides are also important, and there are certain groups for whom they may be particularly important. So you can't stop at LDL cholesterol. You've got to go on to both triglycerides and HDL management.
You know, HDL and triglycerides are harder to manage than giving a patient a statin for their elevated LDL cholesterol. Because if you're thinking about medication, especially in a patient who's already on a statin, then you've got to think about, boy, adding niacin or a fibrate to the statin. When really what should be done first is talking about lifestyle change, diet, and physical activity.
It's important to point out that women have a much higher risk with hypertriglyceridemia and that those with diabetes have a higher risk, and the combination is particularly deadly. Women with diabetes are actually showing an increase in cardiovascular mortality rather than a decrease generally enjoyed by the rest of the population. And so we have to be much more aggressive with them and recognize that there's more cardiovascular disease in women than there is in men, even though it generally starts a little bit later, and that diabetes is an equal opportunity offender, particularly when it comes to women and cardiovascular risk.
Well, to be more pointed about the question then, so how well are physicians doing in regards to managing these risk factors?
Well, there are actually studies that have been looking into this. One recent one is the REACH registry. This is an international population-based registry of patients with cardiovascular disease, either stroke or heart disease, cardiovascular disease. More than 67,000 people from around the world have been enrolled. And it shows, for example, that 55% of them have poorly treated hypertension, hypertension that has not met goals. 5% had undiagnosed hyperglycemia, and the list goes on and on. One interesting point was that a significant majority of the people with multiple risk factors were overweight or obese. So we're learning that we're not doing as good a job as we could be doing.
With patients with known diabetes, unfortunately, the data are a little bit depressing on how well we're achieving our goals. A study from 2004 by Sadal and colleagues looked and found that they were achieving blood pressure goals and A1C goals a little more than 35%, and cholesterol goals with a very modest cholesterol goal of less than 200 for total, which is not where we stand today, actually was only less than 50%. And if you look at all three goals combined, how many were at goal? It was about 7.3%. More recent data suggest we're doing a little bit better with the A1C, but it's still not one of those goals that's hit 50%. And if you look for the very aggressive blood pressure and lipid goals of LDL less than 100 and HDL, we're talking HDL getting about 25, 26% of the time where we want it to be. So we have a long way to go in achieving the goals for targeted prevention.
Then why are physicians having such a difficult time getting their patients to goal?
Well, there are a lot of reasons. You know, we can talk about physicians not having enough time. We're talking about the risk factors for heart disease, which is metabolic syndrome, and it requires attacking for different aspects of metabolic syndrome. So there's a lot of clinical inertia here. Physicians don't have time in general to talk about dietary factors, especially when they haven't really learned about it in medical school. So a lot of what doctors are teaching their patients, those who do stress, diet, and exercise, they've learned on their own. So that's one thing. Especially, it's very difficult to talk to patients about diet and exercise when you have only 15 minutes per patient. But when you're talking particularly about blood pressure goals and giving the patient a medication, it's not just enough to give the patient the medication and lower their blood pressure just a little bit, you still want it, the goal is 130 over 80 or below. Again, and the same is true for fasting blood sugar or oral glucose tolerance test. You want to get the goal to be the fasting blood sugar of 100.
You know, I think that it's important to point out that much of what we wind up doing in clinic practice, I wasn't ever trained, certainly, to do much of this stuff. I've had to learn it on the job. And I think that it is critical to understand that people often think that pretty good is good enough. But the truth is that the data, the evidence basis for medicine is that you need to get to the goal. In fact, typically, to get to the goal, you've got to aim a little beyond it.
Many physicians do find it difficult to use lifestyle change as their therapeutic strategy for patients with cardiometabolic risk factors. We had the opportunity to meet two physicians in a very busy practice in rural Virginia and hear about some of the issues that they face.
Louisa County has about 25,000 in population. The town itself has 2,000 people, more or less. It's a growing community. Louisa is also considered a underserved county. There's only 7 physicians in the entire county.
Hello, Dr. Zimmerman's office.
There's 5 doctors in this practice. We all are very busy.
A lot of our patients rely on us for all of their medical care, and they'd rather come here for emergencies than drive an hour to go to the hospital, get stitches put in.
So no hypertension, no diabetes. Anyone in your family have a heart attack before the age of 65?
When you're seeing 25 to 30 patients every day, you're left with a 10-minute slot or 15-minute slots to deal with all their different problems.
And what we're doing is we're checking your BMI, body mass index, so it looks at the ratio of the weight to your height.
Metabolic syndrome is something we see in a lot of patients. We're treating more and more people with this practically daily. It's really important to try and get some of the problems under control immediately. It's difficult to get people to do this.
Doctors being so busy in addressing the lifestyle issues of the metabolic syndrome is a real problem. And it takes a lot of time to sit down with the patient, find out what they're eating, how they prepare their food, who they have to make the meals for, how they shop, what their financial problems are.
If you're honest with yourself as a physician, you know that that's the best way to approach a patient, is to try to have them modify, to eat a healthy diet, to exercise regularly. That's in an ideal world. In my world, in the real world, it's not reality. And you can talk to your blue in the face, and we never get anywhere.
A lot of physicians in the same sort of situation as me in a rural area where we're seeing a lot of patients who do have these metabolic risk factors, I think are probably a little frustrated. A lot of times when people come in and they're unwilling or unready to modify their lifestyles and making the changes needed to exercise and eat right, then, yeah, we have to use medicines.
I think we have to realize it's very difficult for a lot of our patients to follow our advice. It's much easier to take a medication, to comply with that, to swallow a tablet once or twice a day, than it is to incorporate exercise and diet.
We know that the longer we allow high blood pressure, elevated cholesterol, and diabetes to go untreated or partially treated, the more cardiovascular damage occurs. There's only so much you can do. You can share the information, you can tell them the consequences, but ultimately they have to make the decision to change their behaviors.
So why is it so hard for physicians to discuss these lifestyle issues?
Well, it's very difficult to get the ball rolling with your patient. If you've noticed that your patient has been gaining weight, again, that's why the BMI and the waist circumference is so important as a vital sign. That can be your lead-in. Gee, I've noticed that you've been gaining weight. Your BMI last year was 30 and now it's 32. Can we start talking about weight control? It's about bridging, communicating with your patient and letting them know that you do care and you do know a little bit about their problem.
Recently, I was at a meeting where we polled practicing physicians about how successful they were with lifestyle change in their practices. And the vast majority, 80%, said that less than 10% of their patients were successful with lifestyle alone at reaching their weight goals of 5 to 10% of body weight. And I think that tells us why physicians are demoralized. Doctors feel that it's just not going to be effective. And I think part of the reason is what Carolyn said, is that they don't have the right tools. They need the tools to succeed. They're just giving people nonspecific advice, and it doesn't get them anywhere. What they need is to give them very practical tips and the information that we know can change how they live their lives and how much weight they can lose.
Many doctors never even actually bring the issue of obesity up with their patients. They don't feel comfortable in talking about it. They feel awkward about it. And they need to start that conversation. And because they don't talk about it, people don't get the idea that it's important. I think that you've got to start this conversation someplace in a supportive and non-critical fashion and try to raise the issue in a way that will get people to feel that you're trying to help them.
I think the practitioners we just saw in the story are really represent what's going on out in the population. You can see the difficulty they have trying to practice. They're rushing around from room to room. They're worried about missing a diagnosis. They don't have time to really counsel people in something like obesity that they haven't learned about in medical school. When we put together the NIH Practical Guide, we were trying to give physicians those tools, but they haven't really been implemented.